Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
Governor Scott Walker and Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish survived their recall attempts yesterday. Three of the four Republican state senators did too. It appears Democrats have claimed the Senate district in the Racine area, with the former Democratic state senator John Lehman narrowly defeating the Republican incumbent Van Weingard. We are going to be talking about the recall election results during this edition of our Big Question, and we'll ask you, what does it mean to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, June the 6th. We have with us UW History Professor John Sharpless. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And also by telephone, Ruth Conniff from the Progressive Magazine. Good morning.
Good morning.
So first, Professor Sharpless, what do you make of the recall results from yesterday?
Well, I wasn't surprised that Walker won. I was surprised by the margin. And my view on this is that I think for many people, and I've said this before when I've been on your show, it was a vote against the recall and not so much a vote for Scott Walker. I think many people felt, and I sensed this as soon as I got outside of Dane County in the last 6 months, that the recall effort was inappropriate, that you don't recall somebody in high office unless they're profoundly corrupt or incompetent or there's some kind of extraordinary moral indiscretion. And using recall because you disagree with policy is a pretty heavy mallet to bring to the plate. So I think some of this was a rejection of the recall, not so much an affirmation of Scott Walker as governor.
How do you read it, Ruth?
Well, I think that that's true. I think that there was that sentiment out there. But I think more than anything, you know, this was always an underdog fight between sort of people who were trying to organize and were badly, badly outspent. I mean, you heard the Walker ads on the radio and saw them on television just overwhelming the other side. He raised $30 million, something that's never been done in state history. He raised as much money as a second-tier Republican presidential candidate this year. So, you know, I really think in the end for, you know, for everybody looking at this, it's, you know, it looks like a test of democracy in the Citizens United era, an effort of ordinary voters to organize and overcome the power of big money, 70% of which was raised outside of Wisconsin by Walker. And, you know, the result is not good. So, you know, it's really going to take some thinking on the part of the Democratic Party, the labor unions who were hugely outgunned here, you know, people who just are concerned about this austerity program that is, you know, happening in Wisconsin and sweeping the nation, and, you know, how to fight back against that. The Republicans were extremely well organized nationally. They made this a national issue. The Democratic Party, Obama, the DNC stayed away for the most part. And, you know, I just think that as progressives, we have to respond, and we cannot afford to, you know, just allow this tidal wave to overwhelm us.
Do you think big money won this election, Professor Sharpless?
No. I don't think there were, if you actually looked at the ads on television, for example, and count, I literally spent a week counting ads. They were fairly even up, Barrett and Walker. Both sides had outside money coming in and running independent ads both ways. There were some pretty rough ads about Barrett. There were some nasty ones, but there were some pretty rough ads about Walker. And the campaign was relatively short, so I think it's interesting that a large portion of money that Walker intended to spend, he didn't spend. It's there for future campaigns, which is a kind of a signal to Democrats that they should get their house in shape. This, I think, it has to do with organization. This notion that This was a battle between ordinary people and the titans of industry. It's just silly. Walker won in small towns. People with modest incomes are he resonated across this state. People have to get out of Dane County and grow up.
I don't know. I mean, there is this incredible triumphalism today. You know, the right-wing blogosphere is going crazy. There's a lot of teacher bashing. There's a lot of, you know, ha-ha, in your face, you cry baby. Very nasty. And, I mean, I think there's no doubt that Walker was very effective in dividing the state and in stirring up a tremendous amount of resentment against public sector employees and against teachers. And that was very shocking, I think, to a lot of Wisconsinites because, you know, these are folks who are in public service, and you know, we love our teachers, and so I think that it's true that there were a lot of voters of very modest means who voted with Walker, and they saw that storyline, which is very effectively promoted by the right this year, as resonating with them. That, you know, it is not Wall Street, it is not, you know, the big corporations to whom Walker's been giving these big tax breaks that are your enemy. It is the person next door who has job security and decent benefits. We can't afford this, and we need to go after them, and then, you know, we'll have prosperity, or somehow, you know, you will benefit from this. And this is it's a losing message for working people, because it doesn't offer actually better benefits or job security to the people that it is aimed at, but it taps into a deep feeling of resentment and insecurity, and that has riven our state, and that is going to continue to be a problem for us after this election.
I object. When Democrats win the election with Obama, Americans are speaking out in a bold voice, reflecting a very bright and intelligent vote. And when Democrats lose, the American people are a bunch of dolts who've been confused by propaganda, and they're muddled in their thinking, and they don't know what's good for themselves. How about Barrett lost? He lost in the ground game. The Democrats don't organize in the field well. They don't get their people out. They don't get their message. It used to be telephones. Now it's the web. Democrats have to grow up and start playing politics like they used to play when they used to win elections.
Well, I mean, I think there's definitely lessons the Democrats need to learn from this. There is no doubt. But as far as getting people out goes, I mean, I think what you saw last night was you know, particularly brutal for our side, because you saw this incredible turnout. Actually, in Dane County, it was 80%. In Milwaukee County, in some precincts, they were running out of ballots. They were running out of same-day voter registration forms. In the end, the turnout in Milwaukee County ended up being about halfway in between 2008 and 2010. It was about 50,000 votes more than 2010, about 50,000 less than 2008. So, you know, people did come out to the polls. A lot of people, you know, particularly in the African-American community in Milwaukee, felt they had a personal stake in it. They came out, and that looked really good for the first part of the evening, but it wasn't enough. You know, in the end, it wasn't enough, and I think Barrett did need to do better in the western part of the state, absolutely. You know, I talked to Senator Kathleen Vinehout right before the election, and she said she was worried from talking to people in her district about the degree to which Walker's message was resonating with people, that they felt like, you know, their property tax was going down by $35, and that was, you know, the main thing that they were focused on. And those are areas that Obama won. They're areas that really have to go to the Democrat if a Democrat's going to win in this state.
Well, Ruth, what do you make of exit polling that showed some people who voted for Scott Walker intend to vote for President Obama, that President Obama seems to still be more popular than his Republican opponent in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is definitely what we saw in western Wisconsin. And I think it goes to partly what John was saying at the beginning, which is that people were leery of the recall itself. I think that it goes to not being able to get a positive message out, you know, in terms of what Barrett had to offer to people beyond, you know, the attacks on Walker. But, you know, mostly I think it has to do with this overwhelming advertising barrage and the money. I mean, you really can't deny it, that the money on Walker's side was overwhelming and the advertising was overwhelming. It's 4-1. You know, it's $30 million to $10 million. And he really targeted Milwaukee, and he sent out this message with the horrible dead baby ad and with the attacks very specifically targeted at Milwaukee that I think, you know, played some really nasty politics, and I think it worked.
Let me ask, before we go to break, Professor Sharpless, what this is going to mean for the 2012 presidential election and President Obama in Wisconsin.
I think the exit polling says that this doesn't have much to do with the fall. I see, unless Romney really catches fire in this state. I thought it was interesting. People criticized Obama for not showing up. Romney didn't show up either in this state for Walker. I suspect that Obama's going to do well. And as Ruth pointed out, he will do well, particularly in that tier of states that runs along our west coast, the St. Croix River and on the Mississippi River. He did well over there before, and I think he'll do well over there in the fall. Something may happen. It may be that Romney, something happens to that man's personality that people suddenly warm to him. But I suspect this won't have a lot. I think the real interesting thing is going to be the state legislature in the fall.
We'll talk more about that after we check weather and invite more callers to join us as we talk about the meaning of the outcome of yesterday's recall election. It's today's big question. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with Ruth Conniff, who is the political editor of The Progressive Magazine, and John Sharpless, who is a professor of history at UW-Madison. And we welcome your reaction to the election results. What do they say to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Expect a mostly sunny day today in Wisconsin. There's a slight chance of rain in parts of western and northern Wisconsin. Highs will be mainly in the 70s. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with John Sharpless and Ruth Conniff about yesterday's recall election results. Let me ask you, Professor Sharpless, what do you think of Governor Walker's idea to hold a broad and beer summit with members of the legislature next week to help bring the state together?
It'll be a bunch of Republicans with broad and beer in their hands. I don't think the Democrats are going to show up for that. It was an interesting speech because he combined his statement about an affirmation of a politician who was bold and defied opposition. And at the other moments in the speech, he said, I want to be conciliatory and unify the state. My guess is, as long as Walker's in power, there's not going to be much unity. I think the action now for Wisconsin has, interestingly enough, little to do with Walker. It will have to do with our state house. And I think the fact that John Lyman apparently has won the seat in Racine will make the Senate a Democratic House, and that's going to stop any railroading of additional legislation. And I think in the fall, we're going to see a lot of play in this state house. And if I was advising the Democrats, and there's no reason they should listen to an old Republican, I would say they've got to get their act together. They might be able to do well in that election and lay the basis for their next gubernatorial race.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ruth, do you see Wisconsin coming together?
No, not under Scott Walker. I mean, it's just anathema for him. He is the divide and conquer governor. And I think it's very clear that Walker represents not only this very aggressive, forward-leaning, right-wing agenda that he has brought to Wisconsin, you know, compared with the Democrats, but also even within the state's Republican Party, he's a very polarizing and aggressive figure. I mean, he is no Tommy Thompson, and it is a whole different era in Wisconsin politics now, and I think the Americans for Prosperity Republicans and the Tea Partiers feel like this is a big win for their side, and just judging from their reaction on social media and the, you know, in-your-face nature of it, I have to say, I don't think that the discourse is going to get more civilized. I mean, it's you know, on that level, I think it's very polarizing. On the legislative level, absolutely, John Lehman's win in Racine is going to slow things down. It's going to make it very hard Even when Dale Schultz was empowered by the Senate round of recalls, and it was just that one Republican vote that controlled the Senate, things got slowed down. That is why we didn't get the mining bill. That is why we didn't get special ed vouchers. That's why we don't have a statewide charter school district, because more moderate Republicans in the state legislature peeled off, and they were not willing to go along with some of these plans of Walker. So I think that is definitely a dam on what would otherwise be really just an overpowering raft of right-wing legislation that Walker started out with.
Let me go to Kay in Muscadet. Hello, Kay. You're on the air.
Hey. Yeah, I'm a union member, and my husband is a farmer, and we work out here in Muscadet, and I just want to send a positive message to all the workers in this state that they shouldn't be down in the mouth and sad, because the reality is that we won't be able to win our unions back through the, you know, just voting for Democrats. I think that we have to become cognizant that we have to begin organizing ourselves. We have to organize the unorganized. We have to get the unions into a position where we can force legislation that's in our interest.
All right, Kay, what about that, Ruth Conniff?
Yeah, I think that the caller's absolutely right that, you know, one aspect of this is really not so sudden. It is the very long erosion of both the rates of organization of the workforce. It's, you know, it has plummeted. Their union membership is very low now. There's 17% private sector union households. And that's why it has become a Republican strategy, not just for Scott Walker, but nationally, to target public employees' unions, because the rate of organization for public employees is so much higher, closer to 30%. So, you know, this is the issue. And I think that this is a place where, I mean, just organizing people and giving people an alternative. There was a sign at one of the rallies that said, "Don't like your benefits, join a union." And the message that people need to pull together with a better vision for what middle-class workers really ought to get: decent pay, benefits, job security, instead of this very divisive message that we're all having a race to the bottom, things are bad for everybody, and so I'm angry that my neighbor has decent benefits. You know, this is the message that labor unions need to take out there, and they need to get people organized. And that's been the backbone of the Democratic Party, and as that atrophies, you know, so does Democratic politics. Mm-hmm.
John Sharpless?
Well, there's no doubt that the power of labor unions has declined since it peaked in the 1960s, partly because the industries in which they were so strong, and Ruth hinted at this, have declined in America. The industrial sector has moved overseas, and the one area in which labor unions grew and remained strong was in the public sector. And I think I'm a public sector employee, and the Republican rhetoric that was aimed at me hurt my feelings. It frankly, well, you know that. I commented on this show here. I've put in a good career at the university. I'm proud of being a history teacher. And a lot of the rhetoric that was in the legislature and from Stock Walker maligned my contribution to this state. Public sector workers were not responsible for the deficit of this state. And I want to remind people that Scott Walker has not dealt with the fundamental structural problem with our state. He hasn't dealt with our debt at all. In fact, he made that worse because he used the refunding of the debt in the months of crisis as a wedge issue to try to force a resolution in his behalf. And in that period, when he left the renegotiation of our debt unresolved, it jumped up 2 percentage points. And that's millions of dollars of interest that we owe. He hasn't dealt with that. I would argue that Scott Walker is a political conservative and not a fiscal conservative.
Ruth, does it surprise you to hear that in our minute before news?
Well, I'm gratified to hear that, because I think that that was really frustrating in the campaign, that Walker seemed to be able to argue that he had dealt with the debt in Wisconsin when, you know, if you look closely at that, it was clear that he had just postponed it, refinanced, got a little bit of a break on the interest in the refinance and declared victory, and it is pushing it off to the future. But, you know, the jobs numbers in Wisconsin were terrible, but Walker muddied the waters and people thought that maybe the economy is turning around. Sort of wishful thinking. The debt was not resolved. I mean, these were the issues he ran on in this recall election, and they weren't true.
We will check news and then we'll continue talking with Ruth Conniff, political editor of The Progressive Magazine, and John Sharpless, a professor of history at UW-Madison. We are recapping and discussing the results of yesterday's recall election, and we want to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Wednesday, June 6th. We are talking about yesterday's recall election results with UW-Madison history professor John Sharpless and Ruth Conniff, the political editor of the Progressive magazine. And we're welcoming your thoughts and your reactions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And our next caller is Freddie in New Berlin. Hello, Freddie.
Hi. I just wanted to know how much of the blame does the Democratic Party itself have to shoulder for its loss, this bitter, depressing loss to this megalomaniac in Madison? I know last year, you know, with Doyle's left us with this massive debt problem, and I think the Wisconsin public was upset with that. And then Tom Barrett run another lackluster campaign where he did nothing but trash Walker, but didn't talk about what he was going to do to heal the state's problems and that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. I'd like to hear your response to that.
Ruth?
Well, there's going to be a lot of blame passed around. But, I mean, I think the thing that the caller's talking about, and I think this was really palpable, was sort of the loss of energy as we shifted from what was really kind of a spontaneous grassroots movement, and really spontaneous in the sense that it was led from below, to the official campaign mode. And political campaigns are not grassroots movements, and particularly in such a compressed timeline, to see the energy of the grassroots folded into this campaign was, you know, it was a little dispiriting for people who had been at those massive inspiring rallies and who had been part of this, you know, uprising in Wisconsin. And I think, you know, the Democratic Party was reluctant to attach itself to that, and that was dispiriting for people. So that, you know, people who had been working really hard, who had gathered the signatures on the petitions, who had been at the rallies, who were really fired up, sort of felt that their contribution wasn't valued and they weren't sure how to help. And likewise, the Democratic Party failed to tap into that grassroots energy. And I think, you know, it goes to a long-term pattern of the Democratic Party distancing itself from labor. We didn't hear a whole lot about collective bargaining in the campaign, which was, you know, the issue that kicked this whole thing off. And it goes to kind of a cautious approach. The recall itself seemed like a bad idea to a lot of political consultants for the Democrats, both nationally and in the state. We couldn't control the date. You know, they just weren't sure that this was such a good idea. So I think in the end, we ended up with this, timid attachment, and it just isn't how you win. But also, I think it's important to remember that, you know, it's a long-term struggle. You know, the civil rights movement was not led by Lyndon B. Johnson, you know, and there is this tension between the party and the politicians at the top and the grassroots always. And in this particular election cycle, you know, it was very compressed. So, you know, what labor is fighting for and what, you know, citizens of our state who feel like, you know, slashing public education and, getting rid of our model regulatory apparatus for protecting our environment is a bad idea. You know, those folks are still going to fight. We're not going to, you know, just give up.
Jason on Facebook, a similar comment. The recall showed that the state Democratic Party needs a serious shakeup. They ran a good candidate when they needed a great candidate. Russ Feingold would have been a much better choice, yet the party could not convince him to run. The party bungled the recall badly. They waited too long to submit the signatures, and that pushed the elections into the early summer when a lot of college kids were into a residency quagmire. The party also failed to focus on why Wisconsin needed a change and what that change would be. John Sharpless, you're also thinking that the Democrats bungled this?
Well, they need to look in the mirror on this thing, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of they'll let themselves off the hook by They'll say Walker had more money. I'm sure Wisconsin Democrats are going to be a bit bitter that the National Party wasn't more aggressive, particularly in a key period. There's a period here where I'm a little surprised that the big national Democratic PACs weren't on the ground. Walker suffered as a result of the big demonstrations. His numbers plummeted. And then there was a period there where he didn't run a lot of ads, but all his ads were positive. It was all about Scott changing the world, making America sunny and nice. He loved cows. He loved trees. Trust me, I've got the answer. In that period where he began to rebuild his numbers, that's when the National Democrats should have been taking some hits at him. They waited way too long, and I also thought it was impressive. It isn't simply that Obama didn't show up. Walker had a parade of national Republican leaders pass through the state, and I don't know where the other Democrats in this country were for him, for Barrett. So I think there's as Ruth said, there's a lot of blame to go around. I'm the history professor here, and let me step out of being a person active in politics. Democrats win when they emphasize issues of equity and humanity. Republicans win when they emphasize issues of fiscal conservancy and moral values. What Republicans successfully do is they counter the Democrats on the issue of humanity and equity. Democrats have to get back to that. The campaign can't simply be about Walker being a bad guy. That doesn't carry the campaign forward. They have to have, and I think your caller said this and your Twitter message said this, the Democrats have to have an alternative, positive, not simply negative, but a positive vision for their incumbency. And they haven't been able to do that in Wisconsin.
Let's go to Paula in Madison next. Hello, Paula.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead, Paula.
I was watching the election results, and, you know, it was just from, actually, that's an old point when they project and make the decision who has won the election, and I believe Tom Barrett conceded when only 76 of the percentage of the vote was in. And, you know, my question was, well, I voted early, and then we also have absentee votes that have not been counted, correct?
I think the absentee votes are fed into the machines during the day and are counted. They're counted. But Paula isn't the only one to be concerned, Ruth Khanna, first, that the networks were projecting Governor Walker the winner, and people apparently were still in line to vote in Milwaukee. Were you concerned about that?
Yeah, I think that's just wrong. People were coming out to vote. They were standing in line way past 8 o'clock, and they were being told that the election was over. And, you know, on the national level, we have had a sort of a pact among the networks not to do that because it so disempowers voters. And also, it can have an impact down the ballot. So, you know, that's what you saw in the Reagan-Mondale race. When they announced that Reagan had won and the polls were open in California, a lot of down-ballot Democrats lost their races because people went home thinking the whole thing was over. So it has a real effect. But it also is just anti-democratic because they've interviewed people who are leaving the polling place. They make their projections. That's not counting the votes.
You know, are any other concerns about any abnormalities in voting yesterday, Ruth?
Well, everybody was worried about Kathy Nicklaus, mm-hmm. You know, and it's sort of interesting. She's an elected official, and she has, you know, had such a peculiar and complicated track record of running her own operation there in Waukesha County. But, I mean, I think in the end, you know, there was definitely worry about the Tea Partiers who were coming up from Texas to be poll watchers, quote-unquote, and stand over people. There's a guy standing behind me in line to vote yesterday who said, you know, what are we, Afghanistan, kind of casting a jaundiced eye at the election observer at our little tiny Maple Bluff fire station here. You know, that was a worry. When they were running out of ballots, we heard that there were there was email and calls going out to voters telling them if they'd signed a petition, they didn't have to vote, misleading people. There was a report that 20 young people were turned away at a poll, told that they needed voter ID, and voter ID was not in effect in this election. So all of those things came into it, but not enough. We're not in a, you know, half a percent election here. So I think at the end of the day, the results are the results.
Mm-hmm. Anything further, John?
When you lose an election, it's always about voters can't make it to the polls and corruption of the voting process. When you win, you look right past that. I don't think it made much of a difference in this state. I think, again, you know my stand on this whole thing. I think Republicans make way too much about the Democrats manipulating voter turnout, and I think Democrats make much too much about Republicans trying to keep people away from the polls. I just don't think in this election, I don't think in most American elections, voter corruption was something America had for almost two centuries. I mean, remember in places like Texas and all through the South and in places like Chicago and New York, elections used to be aggressively manipulated. We're past most of that.
Our next caller is Jim in Manitowoc. Hello, Jim.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I'm going to take a little bit of issue with your history professor there in that, you know, he listed the reasons Democrats win and Republicans win. I think in this case, they forgot why we had the recall in the first place. They turned it into a referendum on the economy. And yet, we were motivated over the way Walker conducted his earlier campaign and what he did right after he got into office. It was about the dishonesty associated with that, and that's what motivated the electorate. That's what motivated the recall. That's what had people revved up. And there was almost nothing said about that during the campaign. It turned into a referendum on the economy, which is, you can make a case whether it's accurate or inaccurate, but it wasn't what motivated us. It wasn't what had the grassroots, you know.
Yeah, so if the Democrats would have focused on Governor Walker dropping the bomb regarding collective bargaining and how it was rammed through the legislature, would that have been made a difference, Professor Sharpless?
Well, let's remember that we were told that there were roughly a million names on that petition. And Walker apparently got about 1,200,000, which means he was only able to leverage beyond that petition another 200,000 voters. Certainly, the campaign that led to the recall itself was filled with a lot of enthusiasm. But I think for many people in the state, I keep coming back to this, recall for many people in this state is viewed as something that's in reserve for serious malfeasance. Not simply that a governor does things you don't like, but serious malfeasance, incompetence, moral turpitude of the worst sort. It is considered the last resort of politics, and you don't use it simply because you don't like what the governor did. And I think a lot of people in this state voted against the recall itself.
Yeah, and would more of a focus on collective bargaining and the way that was handled, Ruth Conniff, have made a difference, do you think?
I do think that it was a miss not to tap into that energy that brought those incredible spontaneous crowds out to the Capitol in Madison. And you know, this was not a professional operation. This was not, as the governor claimed, organized by big labor outside the state. This was, you know, our neighbors, our school teachers, everybody we know, snowplow drivers from La Crosse coming out. And that, I think the caller is absolutely right, that initial reaction to say, what? You know, this guy was elected. People weren't paying that much attention to the governor's race to begin with. They were concerned about Russ Feingold. And then, you know, in his campaign, he never mentioned eliminating public employees' collective bargaining rights. So when he did that, and along with that enacted, you know, what Mark Miller described as a threshing machine of right-wing bills that were all, you know, just really intensely aggressive bills, like making the biggest cut to public education in our state's history, you know, just one thing after another. It was a shock, and people thought, oh, my God, we're under assault here. So I think we lost that feeling in the campaign phase, which was, you know, there was a palpable loss of energy. It was not the same as the grassroots response. But, you know, in the end, I think we have to take the long view and see that that grassroots response and that that sense that, you know, we've got to defend civilization here is still there. And it's not just about Tom Barrett. In fact, it was never really about Tom Barrett, right? It was only the very last part of the campaign when we even had a candidate. So, you know, it's a funny thing. On the recall itself, I do agree that people are leery about the recall, but I think it's really important to talk about if they're going to reform recall in Wisconsin, which is a Democratic institution, if you get enough people to sign petitions, and there was no doubt that there was an outpouring, there was, you know, twice as many people as needed to have the recall, that's state law, that's our democratic process, and people have that right. You know, that is just... it's not about removing people from office because they committed crimes, although Walker may turn out to have done that. It's really just a basic democratic progressive era reform. But within that, in the 1980s, they imposed this rule that says that a target of a recall can make unlimited fundraising and can raise from individuals. You know, they're not bound by the individual donor limit of $10,000. So Walker had this amazing advantage once the recall was launched. And I think we need to look at, if we're talking about reform, things like that, where three quarters of his largest donations came from out of state, where he's going to Foster Freeze in Wyoming and Bob Perry in Texas, the guys who floated Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum, and just getting this, you know, unheard of $30 million to put into advertising in our state.
Wait. No, I need to break. I'm way past the break, and then we'll continue talking about the election results. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, June the 6th. We are recapping yesterday's election results and talking about the meaning of the outcome and welcoming your input. We'll continue to do that in our next hour with a wide variety of guests. Right now we are talking with Ruth Conniff, political editor at the Progressive Magazine, and John Sharpless, a professor of history at UW-Madison. I wanted to move away from the actual money that was spent in the election, but I guess this is related, and let me ask John Sharpless first. I heard a voter in Wisconsin interviewed on CNN last night who said what we just witnessed in the recall election and the victory of Governor Scott Walker was the death of democracy, that the grassroots could not defeat his money and his message, and he was practically crying. Did we witness the defeat of democracy last night?
Well, I honestly feel sorry for somebody who is so disillusioned. At the end of my class on American history up to the present, 1945 to the present, I give a kind of pep talk on being active in politics, and the final thing I say in that lecture is, if your candidate is defeated, get back into the battle. Democracy isn't over. The great thing about America is there's always an election coming down the road, and whoever that person is should be taking a look at the fall election, should be looking at the state house, should be preparing to get back into the fray. That's what America is all about. Returning home and going into a pout will not resolve the issue of American democracy. And so people can use this defeat as an excuse for passive cynicism, or they can use it to energize themselves. So I would say to that person, get back into the fray. Get out there. You know, I keep coming back to this. The state house is where the action is in the fall. And if the Democrats focus on that, they can re-establish themselves as a force in this state.
Let's Joe in Milwaukee emails, the elections were a huge victory for Democrats and the unions. They flipped the Senate. The recall motivated Dems to come out and vote. They have now recalled three Republican senators. This is huge. There's no way this election can be understood as a defeat for Democrats. Ruth Conniff, what's your reaction to that?
I'm not there. But, you know, I do think that it's true that there is a victory here with John Lehman's win, with the mobilization of voters, with the fact that we got such heavy turnout in areas that had been, you know, unwilling to go to the polls and not seeing their personal stake in things, and that it would be unfortunate. And I really like what John had to say. I think it would be really unfortunate if people just curled up in a ball. Electoral politics is not the whole story in politics. It is, you know, it is part of it. It is important to be engaged in electoral politics, but it's the grassroots that drives it, you know, and it's the policy issues, and it's the sense of solidarity and community, which really came out so strongly. And I think this last year and a half has been so incredible and historic in Wisconsin, and it's been incredible and historic because people looked around and said, we have a lot in common, and we really have to defend what is important to us. And that is going to go on. So we're going to have to talk about, you know, with a very low rate of union membership, how do you talk about solidarity? How do you talk to people in the middle class who are not in unions about what their stake is in defending the right to organize and, you know, everything that that means? So that's going to be a discussion that's going to have to take place, and we're going to have to keep on talking about democracy. I agree, in the state legislature, you know, if you look at the stand that Peter Barca took against the effort to just ignore Wisconsin's open meetings laws and ram through legislation, that really energized people, the idea of defending our democracy itself and our institutions. And people are more involved and more aware than they ever have been about politics in this state. And that's a great thing. And I think that there is a lot of hope in that.
Let me leave it there for now. We will talk to both of you, I hope, again soon on our Friday Weekend Review program. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Ruth Conniff is political editor at the Progressive Magazine. John Sharpless is a professor of history at UW-Madison. We'll be back with more on the state election results. We'll have Glenn Grothman and Dave Hansen, state senators of Wisconsin, joining us. We'll talk with Todd Berry from the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance. We'll talk with Mary Bell, the president of the Wisconsin Education Association Council, and with you. As we continue, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.